Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
All right, welcome to this roundtable edition of Where Did the Road Go? And we're going to get into the mummies from Peru, as well as some comments on some interesting movies and other stuff we have seen. This was done the same night that we did the show on Stan Romanek. And so it contains the same people, Red Pill, Ren, and Adam. And in true Where Did the Road Go fashion, it goes all over the place. Before we get to that, I want to remind people there are shirts available, and I had hardly ever mentioned this, but if you go to wheredidtheroadgo.com and click on store, you can get Jeff Ritzman's nice Men in Black car design, and soon you'll be able to get Timothy Render's designs as well with the burning card tarot man that was available before. That'll be up as well. The site that I have now that I'm using is a little bit cheaper, so we're going with that. It's very good quality stuff. But the prices are a little bit less, so that way we can sell this stuff for a little bit less. If you want to help out the show, become a patron. That's on the website as well, wheredidtheroadgo.com. And I'm thinking of adding another level to the whole patron thing, and I have a couple of ideas I'm going to run by people very soon. Okay, that's it from me. Well, you know, aside from this entire conversation. Here we go. So for this roundtable show, I am here with Adam from Conspiranormal.
I'm here, ready to talk about mummies.
Ren Collier from Liminal Room.
Hey, everyone.
And Red Pill Junkie from Mexico.
Ay, las momias.
Adam really, really wants to talk about this mummy that Gaia.com is posting this video about.
I am more wanting to get Red Pill's opinion on all this, because I know he ensured that he's caught up. He has kept up with it. But, you know, I've looked at this for like the last 2 months. Someone that I've had on my show before, Chris Wolford, actually brought my attention to it, because I try to ignore this stuff as much as possible. But have you seen? Well, I know you guys have seen it, but it's this little mummy that's in Peru, and it has this weird looking eyes, like these little slit eyes, and has these three fingers. And I guess, you know, Jaime Maussan is involved with it. Like, we just all watched the video right before we started here.
Yeah, and that's definitely a red flag, but go on.
Right, exactly, yeah. So the same guy that was pretty much, you know, it was instrumental in the whole Roswell slides thing, except, mm-hmm. you know, they went from a picture of a mummy to an actual mummy. I guess that was the 3D. Yeah, I guess that was the improvement, even though they denied the first one was a mummy.
I will say, however, though, if he was able to get his hands on something legitimate, it's not like he would pass it up.
I guess that's true. But apparently now I have heard other things that there's been other mummies discovered, and I guess this whole, I've been hearing this whole thing about the blue avians and all this crap.
Oh,
I didn't say the other word, Soraya, this time.
Okay, thanks.
But
now you can. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But yeah, I've been hearing all this stuff about these other mummies that have been found in Peru. And as far as I can tell, none of that's from, I don't know if that's from Gaia. But, you know, it's pretty suspicious, because they, of course, they're charging money for people to see this thing. I guess they're having like these pay-per-views. And
so it's a sideshow attraction.
Supposedly they're handpicked scientists. And Jay Widener, who's not, I mean, the guy's like, I don't know what he is, but he has all these things about alchemy and all this kind of stuff. So I don't really know exactly what's going on with it, other than I don't think that there's anything legitimate to it. But I was curious to get Red Pill's ideas about it.
Yeah, what do you think, Red Pill?
Okay.
So, number 1 through 20.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you guys said, the moment that I saw Jaime Maussan involved in all these, you know, my bull crap the sensor in my brain go beep, 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 you know, and didn't stop firing. It did sound sketchy from the get-go, like, you know,
right.
Stuff from the from these people unearthing this mummy and not revealing where they actually had found it, and then finding all these other mummies accompanied, the others seeming even more fake than the first one. I mean, the first one does look kind of like real, despite of the fact that it has these three long fingers.
At first, well, it looks like it's covered in some kind of weird plaster or something.
Yeah, and they said that it was the kind of thing that they used in order to protect the mummy. And I said, well, you know, I don't know. It doesn't seem like the standard thing to do with a mummy. I mean, I've never seen such a thing done with a rare biological specimen, but okay. And I was very easy to dismiss the whole thing as a hoax, but I remember that I read on Facebook some other day that Chris O'Brien, someone who I have him in a very high regard. You know, he's a very important investigator. You know, he has been investigating things like cattle mutilations. He has written what I probably is the definitive book in cattle mutilations, Stuck in the Herd.
I think he agreed. Yeah,
like two years ago or something like that. And I think he was shown x-rays of this particular mummy. You know, particularly he was shown x-rays of the hand with the apparent three fingers. And his conclusion for, you know, and he is, it's not that he is an expert. I mean, he doesn't have a PhD in biology or medicine or whatever, but he is someone who has had his fair share of investigating these kind of things. You know, I mean, searching through biological data and X-rays when seeing investigating through cattle mutilation. So his conclusion apparently was that if that was a fake, the three fingers, if someone had actually like cut off the extra digit from the mummy, that they had done a pretty good job at it. You know, it was a pretty good fake, in his opinion, if it was a fake. So that was interesting for me.
I wonder if though, because to me, I thought that since the thing is covered in, I don't know what it is, plaster, I don't know, but it's some kind of white substance. It looks like it's been covered with something. I don't think that it would look like perfectly white like that. You don't really see that. I've never seen that in any kind of mummy. I'm not a mummy expert or anything.
No.
But it would seem like they would have maybe cut off the existing hands, put whoever did it, cut off the existing hands, put the three-fingered hands on, and then covered it so it didn't look like that happened.
Yeah, it has to be mentioned that actual mummy experts from Peru have been very skeptical and critical on this whole affair. You know, I mean, they have been...
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, they have said that they don't agree with the way that these supposed mummies have been handled and the conclusions that the people who are promoting this theory about them, you know, they are not on board with the idea that these mummies are examples of some kind of non-human biological specimens.
Yeah.
Well, so my way of looking at it is this. It's, first of all, the mainstream archaeological community is going to try and dismiss anything that's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that these are necessarily, you know, I think that part of the problem is people are saying these are aliens. Well, that's not necessarily the case. I mean, look how many different species of human we've been finding that we don't have. And, you know, the Denisovans, we don't even know much about the Denisovans. We found a few bone fragments here and there and know they exist.
Yeah.
We know hobbits existed because we found just a few bones.
Yeah.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that there's yet other subdivisions of humans that have not survived to this day. Mm-hmm. That may be found mummified somewhere or whatever, that were really just a complete different offshoot that died out. And that very well may be what we're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I have not much patience for the idea of sort of gray aliens or sort of other humanoid looking, you know, what people would call extraterrestrials being actual physical beings. Because,
right.
Like, I mean, first of all, an alien is not going to look like it evolved from an Earth monkey, okay? Like, it's not. I mean, really, like, call me when you find a Shoggoth, and you know, in Antarctica.
Right.
Like, call me when you find a mummified, like, tentacled monstrosity, you know, in some sort of cyclopean ruin in the Pacific Ocean. Like, that's when I'm going to get excited.
Like, everything this has to be humanoid. Everything has to be humanoid. It's just like Star Trek.
Yeah, I'm with Sarai on this in that, you know, I do believe that there are offshoots and variants of basically like humans that died off or were outcompeted by modern day humans. Like, you know, there's the whole story of the Sitika and, you know, like the red haired giants that were part of the North American ecosystem that were in conflict with the Native Americans. And, you know, I sort of buy into that idea. I don't think that that's incredibly far fetched. And no. If this does turn out to be, you know, not fake, which it looks like a sculpture to me, but if it turns out to be,
right,
you know, real in any way, my first guess would not be that it's extraterrestrial, but maybe some sort of like human cousin or offshoot that, you know, lived in South America at that time. But even so, the three fingers on the hands and feet just, I don't know. Something really rubbed me the wrong way about that.
Yeah. So, okay. If it is like what Sarai is saying, which is a possibility, then I could believe the head. I could believe the head being a little strange. Maybe, you know, a humanoid evolved that had a stranger
and not
head
really,
or something.
Because in those places, elongation of the cranium was a normal ritual.
Right, exactly. But that's one of the reasons why I can believe it. But, you know, the three fingers is a little hard to believe that that could be a humanoid, because even, I mean, all primates down to lemurs have five digits.
Yeah, that's the big thing. The three fingers, I mean, it's going to be really tragic if it turns out that it's literally a human corpse that has been mutilated and has been altered in some way in order to make it appear something else.
That's the problem. I sent you guys a link. This is from Dr. Heiser. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, but he actually translated from the World Congress on Mummy Studies. Do you mind if I read some of this, Soraya?
No, go ahead.
Okay, please. So this is a statement, but this is, I guess this is the World Congress, but I don't know if this is, I don't think they're Peruvian. I think they're just for the entire world. So this is statement by the scientific community about the fraud of alien mummies. Adherents of this document, members of the national and international scientific community, experts in the study and preservation of human remains, mummies, and skeletons communicate the following. One, for some time now, the alleged discovery of alien mummies, quote unquote, in our country has been publicized. So I guess it is from Peru. Has been publicized through an irresponsible, organized campaign of disinformation. Number two, the published testimonies and images make it possible to affirm that these findings correspond without any doubt to human remains Colombian. I guess, I think they mean pre-Columbian, the cultural heritage of the nation. Furthermore, the exclusion of the entire related archaeological context is absolutely contrary to the scientific research of this kind of cultural property. Three, it is up to the authorities to make the corresponding complaint since the production has violated numerous national and international standards which ensure the defense of cultural heritage. We hope that these same authorities will ensure the proper protection and proper investigation of these remains, as well as their place of origin, in order to stop, I guess something didn't get translated, and trafficking Huacayo and trafficking of human remains. We also
expect exemplary. Yeah, Huacayo is the term that in Peru is used for grave robbers.
Ah, okay. Ah. We also expect exemplary sanctions for those responsible for this predation of the heritage, which is of all Peruvians and humanity. Four, finally, these illegal and criminal actions in a human body violate human dignity, in particular the exploitation of pre-Columbian mummies carried out by these people, assaults and offends the Andean culture, implying that their achievements were due to so-called, quote-unquote, external aid. The undersigned offer our best offices to work with the authorities to demonstrate our statements in the relevant bodies. We also offer to participate in activities that contribute to defending and highlighting the importance of our cultural heritage, legacy of our ancestors. Then it has all the undersigned. I could go on if you want with this. But no. it basically says that, you know, that there could be a crime involved here, which is pretty much you know, robbery of a corpse and possible desecration of a corpse. And especially, you know, this is a very sensitive subject in this country with, you know, Indian remains and such. I think it could be even a more sensitive, down there where you have these, well, I guess these gringos coming out of nowhere and stealing, you know, possibly stealing a body. It's not, it seems like it's not being looked too highly upon by the actual Peruvian authorities.
Well, I think Peru is very sensitive, especially right now, about this kind of thing because of the sort of complete garbage show that the Greenpeace organization caused down there with the Nazca lines, how they like made this whole like big art project, you know, about climate change or something down there, but it like they damaged and destroyed parts of the lines. And
I hadn't heard about it.
Yeah, they screwed up some of the lines and caused all this damage, and you know, did it without any, you know, authority or knowledge of the Peruvian government, and it was a huge sting.
Uh-huh.
So I mean, I think they're basically fed up with foreigners coming in there.
Well, also UNESCO would be involved with this too, because they would be equally mad. Because I would say that the Nazca line, I'm not sure, but I'm fairly sure they're a UNESCO cultural site.
You're correct about that.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the elongated skull thing, and there seems to be two types of elongated skulls. There's the ones that are formed, where, you know, they're emulating something, but there have been a handful of skulls found that do not seem to be standardly human. There were some found in Malta, and they mysteriously disappeared. Graham Hancock writes about that in Underworld, where they only have two cranial plates, and the skull sits slightly differently on the head, and there's actually more volume, which you wouldn't get from elongating a skull with boards. And I believe there's been a couple found in Peru that I think that's what Brian Forrester is trying to get tested on. And of course he has his own array of sketchiness around him, but and also, you know, people upset that he's trying to get DNA testing done on this stuff, claiming he's, you know, stealing their cultural heritage and stuff like that.
Uh huh.
So, I mean, it's possible, you know, the elongated skull thing could be another offshoot. There could have been a race of people who had these elongated skulls, and maybe they were a leader class, and, you know, that's why the people were elongating their skulls to look like them. There's also the Starchild skull, which comes from that general area as well. Or maybe Central America, I think that was found.
I think it was found in Mexico.
Yeah, maybe. And, you know, like, the work that, what was his name? Lloyd Pye.
Mm-hmm.
The work Lloyd Pye did on it was interesting. He did a good job toward proving that it wasn't a modified skull. However, he then immediately jumped to that's the skull of a gray alien, and all his credibility went out the window.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Why does everything always have to be aliens? Why does...
Yeah.
Everything. Mm-hmm. If it's even the least bit weird, it's like, oh, let's jump to the fact that they're from outer space.
Right.
And now, not possibly from here. With the diversity of life on this planet, on this planet alone, you would just like come to the, well, let's see if it's from here first before we start jumping to the conclusion that it has three fingers, so it must be from Zeta Reticuli.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a sort of a blog entry on my blog about sort of examining the gray alien morphology just from a purely material perspective and being like, you know, could they be, if they were physical, like, what would this say about them? And my basic conclusion would that they would basically be a species of human or basically ape-derived that evolved or lived primarily like underground, because all the all the features that they exhibit would be features exhibited by like a subterranean species. And, you know, like, I was really into like MacDonies at the time, so. But yeah, I mean, the whole idea that an alien species from a completely different star system or world would resemble like anything on Earth is, I think, patently like disingenuous. Like, this just.
But that's where the ancient alien thing comes in, and they say, well, they created us, so of course we look like them. Mm. They don't look like us; we look like them.
Mm. Explaining one unknown with another unknown.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Mm. And giants are another interesting thing. I mean, we mentioned that briefly, but there's plenty of giant skeletons around that don't seem to have just been, is it the thyroid that goes out of whack and people like Andre the Giant and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a headspace right now where I do think that there were migrations to North America before what we think of as the Native Americans migrated, and that basically there were other people here when they arrived, and then, you know, they either killed them off or outcompeted them, because, you know, you hear things about the mound builder culture, and, you know, I don't know how true or false this is, but the idea that the Native Americans didn't build the mounds, that their explanation was that they were already there when they got there.
Yes.
You know, like, sort of the stories of like red-haired giants. There's like in South America, there's also the you know, the city of the white monkey god, where they, you know, said that there were hairy people that live there, that they basically, you know, would raid their villages and stuff, and so they eventually got together and killed them off. You know, there are all kinds of stories of sort of these contacts with other human variants in the Americas that predate the Native Americans. So, you know, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that you know, there were other variants of humankind. I mean, obviously, you know, Neanderthals and humans lived, coexisted on Earth for some period of time, and we interbred with them, we ate them, they ate us, you know, and eventually they were just outcompeted. You know, I've got freckles, so I carry some Neanderthal genes. So, like, we know these things happen. We're just but conflating that with extraterrestrials is a bit much.
It's unnecessary, yeah. Really, is what it is. The giants, you know, you get that in the lore as well of Native Americans and such, who talk about, and they talk about Bigfoot as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and these are not things, these are things that a lot of people look at now and say, well, this is a modern invention. But when you see it dating back through the lore of all these cultures, not just Native Americans, mm-hmm. but Native cultures all over the world, there's something more to it at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very fascinated by who the mole people, or was it the ant people? The ant people mm-hmm. that supposedly saved the Native Americans from the last cataclysm. It's like, okay, well, that's interesting. I wonder what that's all about. I mean, it's been translated for so long that it may have lost some of its original meaning. Mm-hmm. But who knows what really happened there that they're trying to preserve.
Yeah, you know, especially the history of North America is peppered with anomalous things like that. I know, you know, there's theories that, you know, we obviously know that, okay, like the Portuguese were not the first people to come to the Americas. That there were, you know, I don't know if I buy the whole, like, the Egyptians came to the Americas, but we know certainly, like, Nordic people came to the Americas before, like, you know, Western Europeans. We know that possibly the Chinese also came to the Americas. You know, in Georgia, there's like Fort Mountain, where there's, you know, stone ruins that were obviously not built by the indigenous people who were there, but, you know, remain sort of anomalous. Like, no one really knows who built them. There are weird Celtic, you know, type markings and stuff around there. So were these outposts that, you know, were eventually just abandoned, or the settlers died off or were killed off, you know? So
not to mention all the places that have been destroyed. Mm-hmm. There were quite a few in upstate New York that simply don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder how many, like, ancient stone structures were just taken apart by people building fences.
Yeah. They didn't care. It wasn't important to them at the time.
Yep. Mm.
They needed their wall. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I found at least the illusion that they're using technology and stuff to study these mummies interesting. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of left myself agnostic on that. It's kind of like, okay, we'll see what happens. Unlike, say, the Roswell slides, which as soon as it came out and I started hearing more about it, I went, yeah, this is nonsense.
Well, the real test will be, do they go through peer review, and do they release these remains to, you know, third parties for research?
Well, yes, so far they haven't. So far mm-hmm. it's just been Gaia. Gaia has like complete control over this little body. Mm-hmm. That's it. Anybody that has come to look at this thing has all been through Gaia, and that's it. So that's suspicious.
Yeah.
If they really want to bring this to the world, if this is the most important discovery in the history of mankind, they need to give it to everybody.
But they can get a lot more subscriptions to their channel.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can. And see, they're pushing this. Apparently, I sent you guys another article from RT. Apparently, Masson is saying there's 5 bodies, like I said before. Yep. And then they're equating it with this whole blue avians thing, which has become kind of a meme lately in the UFO community because of this guy.
When is this guy avian?
That's the thing. There's a guy named Corey Good who I just heard about this guy really yesterday. And it's funny because he makes the same claims as a guy that I had on my show called Captain K, that he was this soldier on Mars and that he time traveled and was sent into another body, which is reminiscent of, I'm sure you're familiar, Sarai, of the Al Bielek stuff. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's also literally like Edgar Rice Burroughs. Mars
I never even thought about that, Ren. Thank you. John Carter of Mars.
He literally like telepathically travels to Mars and is like
but he is saying that this guy Corey Good is saying that he's in contact with this race called the Blue Avians. Okay, well, guess what, I go look up Corey Good yesterday, and one of the first things I see is how to subscribe to Gaia to watch his TV show.
Yeah. Mm. So they're Gaia is kind of cornering the market on being sensationalist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just looked it up. Blue Avians. I've never even heard of this. Also known as the Sphere Alliance.
Yeah. Walter Bosley's been making fun of it lately. He's been saying that they found pictures of the blue avians at Roswell, and he puts like a picture of a guy in a chicken suit.
I mean, it is interesting in that this is like a completely new mythology that's like forming that we're like got a front seat for.
True.
So from just a perspective, like a folklorics perspective, I guess this is interesting.
Yeah. But people are eating it. People are eating it up, man. Because the thing is that I listened to Greg Bishop. Have you guys heard the latest Radio Mysterioso?
Not yet.
Talking about he interviews this guy. His name's James Clarkston, who just retired from MUFON. Because of how everybody is just getting on this band of the bandwagon of all these weird beliefs. And he mentioned this Corey Good guy. That's how I listened to him. I thought this was Captain K. Maybe he came out with his real name or something, but it's just a different guy saying the same story.
Well,
but
MUFON has been abandoned. MUFON has been abandoned, but a lot of members, not only because of weird claims, but also because of other controversial facts have been happening, you know, lately.
Like what?
Like John Venter, who is a prominent member of MUFON, who said something very controversial and damning on Facebook. You know,
wasn't he like saying some racist stuff on Facebook?
Very
he was talking about white genocide.
Oh no!
Yeah, and the way that the leadership on MUFON had tried to I don't want to say defend him, but tried to like downplay his remarks. You know, John Harrison, you know, tried to say, well, you know, everybody is entitled to his opinion, and that's kind of like what made a lot of people to say, well, darn it, you know. I'm leaving this organization and the hell with it.
Yeah. And at the same time, though, you've got all this weirdness creeping in. Mm-hmm. So like we were, you know, we talked about Stan Romanek. I mean, the same thing is happening now because it's all these personalities that are coming up in this and move on. And they're not a scientifically based organization where, well, okay, UFOs are real, but we don't know what they are. But now they're starting from the point of view, oh, it's all space aliens, and now apparently it's blue avians, and apparently they're all buying that whoever's left is buying the fact that this guy was a Martian super soldier. I mean, it's unreal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. There are people staying, and there are people staying in MUFON that are eating it up.
Consider the fact that NASA had to put out a press release to assure people there weren't like child sex slaves or whatever on Mars. And it's like, has it really gotten to this point? I mean, Alex Jones has always been on the sensationalist sort of thing to draw listeners in, but now he's gone like so far over the top, so into crazy town, like so many people like that do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In his defense, it was a guest that he had on the show that mentioned that, but
yeah, but still,
yeah, he probably didn't do too much to say you're crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Just to have someone on that's going to be talking about stuff like that. I mean, unless you can absolutely verifiably prove it, you know, come on.
Yeah, agreed.
So, but that's where everything goes. Everything has to be sensationalized. And I found through doing this show that there are a lot of people who don't want the sensationalized stuff. People who want to know the core of what's going on. They just don't want the next sensational story that'll then fade away into myths. It's pop paranormal stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's popular on TV now. There's big money in it, you know. That's
yeah,
and that I mean, it taints it. I mean, the financial incentives behind creating mythologies like this are immense.
Mm-hmm. True. But you can create mythologies like this in fiction without doing this type of stuff, you know?
Where would the fun be in that?
What is with the blue avians thing? This is still freaking me out. Like, did somebody encounter one of these things? I mean, like, is where did this come from?
It's Corey Good. It's all him. I'll go to his website here.
I don't even know who Corey Good is. I've never heard of him.
Heard of him until last night.
Like, there's so much art on Google image search of like blue avians. Like, this seems to be a really popular thing. It's like, but I've
so
never
popular
heard of
that MUFON is going to put him as one of his speakers. You know, in one of his in their next conference. You know, they're giving him that platform, and I think that Richard Dolan, you know, was kind of like saying, well, you know, I'm not going to be there, you know, because they were asking him to be there alongside with Corey Good because they were trying to promote their next conference as a secret space program conference.
Mm.
And, you know, to the credit of Dolan, as far as I can know, you know, he kind of refused and say, well, you know what? You know, I'm not interested in promoting something that cannot be verified. And Corey Good's story is, you know, it's the perfect fairy tale. It cannot be falsified. It cannot be verified because there's, you know, it's only his word.
Yeah, Cosmic Disclosure is the show on Gaia, which you can watch for 99 cents for every episode. Or a $20 3-month plan. So it's like Sphere Being Alliance. And it's all Galactic Federation kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, again, here's another guy that says, well, I was chosen by this race of people.
I'm special.
You know, Dave, apparently he's got some kind of association with David Wilcox, who was so out there in the new age world, and Jay Widener is kind of along with that little group too, you know.
Not familiar with him.
He talks a lot about his big thing. Did you see the movie Room 237 about The Shining?
Mm-hmm.
Of that was Jay Widener.
All right.
Which I think most of what he talked about was Kubrick faking the moon landing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the NASA sweater.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely something there. I don't know if it's proof that he faked the moon landing, but there's definitely references to the moon landing there.
Well, I think it was just Kubrick being Kubrick and just messing with people, essentially.
Kubrick was very cheeky about that kind of stuff, and I'm sure that it's... So I'm like a huge Kubrick fan. Nothing he does is like ever unintentional in any of his movies.
No,
everything is there for a reason. But sometimes things are there just to mess with people, or just to like, you know, poke fun at certain things. He has a sense of humor, and I think that that's what the NASA shirt and all the other things are about.
Yeah,
I would also accept that NASA may have faked the video of the moon landing to hide the technology we were actually using to get there.
Well, I think the most convincing, I obviously believe we've been to the moon. I'm not like a moon landing hoax guy. But I do think that if there are any legs to that story, the idea that NASA would first shoot it on a stage in case something terrible happened when the actual landing happened, like a crash or you know, something unexpected happens, as a way to save face or save embarrassment and then presented that, makes sense to me on some level, but I'm still, I don't know. I'm very sort of on the fence and on my ideas as that goes.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Because, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, the space race was primarily like a psychological tool. You know, it was a way, it was very tied up with the Cold War.
Sure, and the Russians, the enemy, would have, you know, shouted out if they have perceived that the lunar landing was a hoax. They would have, you know, they would have tried to cry foul.
They would have.
Well, the Illuminati would have stopped
them. Not unless they were all in on it together. And the entire Cold War was a fake. And
right.
Well, see, it was really fake, Soraya, because they needed to hide all of the alien technology present on the moon.
Well, that's why we didn't go back, because we were told not to go back.
I mean, you got to say what you want to about that, but I've read Ingo Swann Penetration, and I really do believe that there are alien technologies on the far side of the moon.
Oh, yeah, an alien naked people, you know, working
the far side. Yeah, extremely well-muscled, beautiful men just mining away on the moon forever. That's what's going on.
You know, I would not be shocked if there was something left on the moon from a previous civilization.
Yeah, me too.
Well, yeah, the moon's super weird. I mean, I go back and forth on my ideas about the moon. Like, sort of in my own personal mythology that, you know, exists only in my head. Like, I believe that the moon is like an artificial satellite and all this kind of stuff.
Yes.
But, yep, you know, same here. I can't prove that. You know,
nope.
So I don't really talk about that a lot, but I mean, you know, it's a fun idea, but
it is, it's a very fun idea.
I mean,
and there are some legs under it too. That's the thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of things about the moon we don't understand. And, you know, I'm much more, I guess, on the Mars like boat than the moon thing. Like, I definitely do think that there probably are ruins of some sort on Mars. There's just, you know, like, I think Mac Tony's made a great case for that. And there's the whole thing with the xenon in the atmosphere and this, all this other stuff. But, you know, the moon's certainly strange. I don't know exactly what I think about it. You know, I'd love to go there myself and check it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you got to get signed up for the, you got to get signed up for the Mars Defense Force.
Yeah.
I'm sure that I think you have to be genetically engineered though for that. So,
well, the first step is clearly signing up for Gaia TV.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's your first step.
You sign up for Gaia. They send you a package with the super soldier serum. You inject yourself and the
time travel device.
Yeah. Yeah. They send you a flux capacitor. You put it in the back of your car. And then you go straight to Mars, and then you're, you know, fight
and
in the secret space program.
And you can watch all their shows for free.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I want to take kind of a left turn here.
Okay.
And there's a movie I watched last night before. I have no concept of time. Anyway, it's a movie that stars Tom Hanks called The Circle. Have any of you seen it?
Mm-mm. No, never even heard of it.
Yeah. Okay. It's not a great movie, first of all. Emma Watson, who played in Harry Potter, is that her?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. She's the other one of the other main characters in it. It's not a horrible movie. But it raises some interesting questions. So you don't actually need to see it to have this discussion. Basically, the idea is Tom Hanks runs a company that's sort of like Apple, a little bit like Google, where they're this super company that is trying to kind of get their fingers into everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Emma's character is new to the company, but she's very smart. And as it starts going, it starts, you know, like one of the first things Tom Hanks comes up with are these little cameras that are, as he puts it, less than a cheap pair of pants, and they can stick to anything. And they're about the size of a marble, and they're literally like, we can put cameras everywhere. And they start building this mythology of secrets are lies, and you should never have secrets. So everyone should be transparent. Their lives should just be open to everyone else, and this would solve all the problems in the world. And I don't see that as a far-fetched ideal for some people. I think there are people who really do think that way. There was an incident where Emma had taken a kayak out on the bay or whatever. And she almost drowned, but because of the cameras, you know, they knew she had taken it out, and the helicopter came and saved her. But Tom Hanks is saying, well, what did you feel when you were, you know, paddling that kayak at night in the, you know, full moon and all this? And she's describing how wonderful it felt. And he's going, well, don't you think that's selfish that you weren't recording that so everyone else could see it? You know, and then she kind of goes along with it, and I'm like, I guess it is selfish. And I'm thinking, no, it's not. Because sometimes the universe talks to just us. And sometimes we want to talk to just one other person. And that's not something that should be shared with everyone. I mean, everyone needs to have their own experiences. But this concept of like privacy and such being like a selfish idea is, like I said, I don't think it's that far-fetched. I mean, it was a bit of a dystopian type of movie, but I think it's something that, that we're really going to have to deal with in the coming years.
I think we're already dealing with it.
To some degree, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, if I you mean, look...
I was just going to say, like, you know,
I was just going to make the point, you know, the whole Edward Snowden, when all that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the, everybody, people, you, that was one of the things that you heard a lot, even on talk radio, was, like, you know, the conservative talk radio, well, if you got nothing to hide, you know, then you shouldn't worry about it. You know, that kind of concept. And it's like, no, that's not how it works. It's not how it should be.
Exactly. You know, the idea of privacy as a human right is something that I don't think gets brought up enough. And I work in information security as my day job. And, you know, just the idea, like, there's been a lot of push in Congress lately to put, you know, quote unquote, backdoors and encryption algorithms. And people just don't seem to understand the fundamental idea that, like, you have to be able to establish trust in like encryption algorithms, and having a backdoor, you know, those backdoors will always get exploited by someone. Someone's going to find them. You know, it doesn't make your castle walls any more secure to put a door in them.
And good point. You know, they in the movie, they sell it, you know, of course, Tom Hanks is a charismatic person to begin with. So he was the perfect one to kind of be this charismatic leader, this Steve Jobs like personality who was out there saying, you know, well, if we have transparency, then, you know, people will be safer and it'll bring everyone together. And he makes these really good arguments. And then the first thing that comes to mind with the cameras is, and then people are going to stick them in ladies' rooms and you're going to get them in bathroom stalls. And the guy down the street that wants to stalk that girl, well, he could do it a lot easier now with this camera if he can just stick it to something near her.
Well, we're just doing it to ourselves these days. I mean, we give up so much information freely on social media to these companies. And the sad thing is that, you know, at least it seems like this movie presents it as this sort of ethical argument that, you know, by being a more open society, we would be safer, or that we would be more connected as a people. But ultimately, the reality is it's simply used to make money. I mean, these companies gather information about you so they can more effectively assault you with ads.
Okay, guys. Yep. I mean, I live in Mexico, right? I live in a country in which three of my former, the former governors of our state are now charged with corruption, are now prosecuted. And there is this idea of, some of these guys are probably going to run free because we don't have apparently the government doesn't have an actual case on them. They don't have the capacity to create a solid case against them. Mm-hmm. So when you talk to me about transparency and all that, you're talking about the underdog. They're talking about the common citizens. Mm-hmm. I want transparency in the people on the top.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the movie talks about. Like they're saying we need to have transparency for our political leaders.
Exactly.
You know, we need to be able to see who they're talking to, what they're talking about, because we need to know, you know, what if they're doing what we want them to do as their, you know, as our leaders. Of course, and then they're talking about forcing everyone to vote, making voting mandatory, and everyone has to sign up for the circle, which would be like, you know, what that, you know, Google saying everyone has to have a Google account, and by having a Google account, you automatically vote, and you have to vote, and it's like, okay, that's pushing, you know, that's getting, you know, I understand that what they're trying to do, but at the same time, you see little messages popping up on the screen as people are responding to this, and someone goes, isn't this just kind of like mob rule at that point?
Well, you know, it like what Red Pill said, these tools, have the ability to provide transparency at the top levels like that, but that's never how they're used. They're always used as a way to oppress people, as a way to oppress the common person, and act as a tool of like capitalism. You know, it's that's how it's always perverted and used against us. You know, whereas, yeah, I mean, it could be used in a certain way, but you know, you're giving these people these tools and then trusting them to use them correctly.
Yeah. And that's what never happens, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do think there is a, you know, it's there's no perfect system, first of all. But if every single person in the country got a vote, it could be sort of a mob rules sort of situation, because you get people, especially with the effective propaganda that media companies and stuff can control at this point. Mm-hmm. You could control people to do whatever you wanted them to do, and they'd be thinking that they're doing it of their own free will.
Well, on the other hand,
kind of sounds like what just happened last year.
Well, you know, on the other hand, the voter disenfranchisement and gerrymandering have been a huge tool by people in power to prevent people from having a vote and prevent people from making their voices heard.
Red pill in Mexico, are you required to vote by law? Do you you have to vote? Is that
no?
Do you have that in Mexico? Okay,
no.
Brazil is like that. Like every citizen Brazil has is to like vote, that. Or you get fined.
Australia is like that. Right. No, in Mexico a lot of parties, a lot of political parties, basically. Buy votes by giving people, a soda pop and a sandwich. They get votes.
You know, I'll give you an example, like where I'm originally from in Alabama, over this last election cycle, even, they, instituted all these new voting laws where you had to have like a driver's license in order to vote, even if you didn't drive. And in order to get this driver's license, you had to go to a DMV and pay money. So usually it's like $35, $40, which can be a significant amount of money for somebody if they're working minimum wage. Yep. And as the election got closer and they started instituting these laws, they started closing DMVs. So some people, if they wanted to vote, had to drive hours and hours. You know, and these are people who were working 60 hours a week at some minimum wage job. Like they don't have time to go to the DMV, or that, elderly people, there's this systematic desire to take the vote away from these kind of people. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily think that requiring people to vote would be a bad thing, because anything that gets more people registered. Yeah.
But I think there is some power in abstaining from voting as well.
Sure. In drawing a blank vote, which is not the same thing as abstaining.
Okay. Fair enough.
Are we talking politics on Where Did the Road Go?
We're talking around the edges of edges of politics. We're not going to go deep into politics. But the other point here is this: as I was watching this movie, and like I said, the movie's not terrible. It's not great, but I expected it to be better than it was considering the cast.
Yeah.
But it also makes me wonder, like when we look at people who have paranormal encounters, they're generally not experiences with tons of cameras around or electronics around. You're more likely to have a weird encounter in the woods than you are, in front of a whole bunch of cameras, the whole world watching. You're probably not going to have a paranormal encounter. That type of communication with whatever that is, it seems, would be lessened by this level of transparency for everybody, if you want to call it transparency.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like I said, that girl on the canoe, it's not going to have the same impact to her on that moonlit canoe ride if she's basically doing it, sharing it with everyone.
Hmm. Well, I think about that scene in that documentary, The Nightmare, where the guy describes that, he was having less experiences when he filled his bedroom with electronics. cameras and TVs and things like that. So it's possible that, you know, I don't know, whatever these type of experiences aren't conducive to being documented in that fashion.
Well, and also consider that, you know, you have a lot of electronics go crazy during paranormal encounters, especially UFO encounters.
Yeah.
You have the Keith Linder case with the Seattle Demon House, where you have EVPs of these things saying they don't like cameras, you know, and flat out saying they don't like the infrared, you know, and that's what, of course, every ghost hunting TV show now uses is infrared cameras. But you have these things going, what's that? The camera. I don't like those, you know? And it's like, what's going on here? Like, there's no good explanation for what happened to Keith. And a lot of solid evidence behind it. Unlike, say, you know, Stan Romanek, where it's all real sketchy evidence. This evidence was captured pretty convincingly and very, very hard to explain. So, you know, maybe there is something in the electrical field that we saturate ourselves with that disconnects us from these things.
I've thought about that a couple years ago. I was thinking about if experiences in cities or certain areas are less frequent because of the existence of like high tension power lines. If the sort of, and maybe also too, the existence of like cellular coverage could also, you know, that's RF frequency. It could also interrupt that kind of thing. I mean, there'd have to be actual research on that. An interesting sort of aside to that, in Whitley Strieber's transformation, there's a part where he has an out-of-body experience in which he looks at the power lines and he can see the electricity, or like see, I guess, the electromagnetic field around the power line sort of emanating around. And, you know, we forget that we're constantly just within all of these fields. And as time and technology has progressed, they've only grown more dense. I mean, one example, like your Wi-Fi routers, if they're still on the 2.4 gigahertz like bands, those are so saturated now in urban areas that you'll have a really hard time finding a channel that you can run on that isn't already being used by your neighbors. That's why there was the big push to move to 5 gigahertz. But, you know, we're constantly bathed in this radiation all around us, and that, you know, this is a relatively modern occurrence. You know, this has only been in the last 50 years that this has really become commonplace.
Yeah. People can also have hallucinations because of EMF as well.
Yes.
True.
Not only that, but if the power goes out, you can feel it.
Yeah.
Like, it's subtle, but things just feel different. And some of it obviously is you don't have that background hum of stuff running, but there's just, it just feels different. It feels like what it feels like to be out deep in the woods away from everything.
It's a sixth sense. I mean, there are plenty of animals that can sense electromagnetic fields. I mean, that's one theory about how birds navigate. And I would probably feel safe betting money on the fact that humans have an organ or have a part of our brain that can detect EMF or electromagnetic fields. It may not be a conscious thing, but you can feel it, like you mentioned.
Yeah, subconsciously.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. You can feel the presence of that kind of energy, even if you aren't quite aware of it.
Somebody told me that, remember all the bird die-offs?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me that, you know, when that happened, that was also corresponding when all the 4G was being put up.
Huh.
I mean, that's
like that was throwing them off.
Mm-hmm. It's possible, because I mean, they use the Earth's magnetic field and to navigate. So, I mean, who knows? It could interfere with that.
Have any of you seen the American adaptation of the movie Pulse?
Yes.
Pulse.
Mm-hmm.
Pulse. It's initially a Japanese movie that dealt with ghosts coming through sort of the electrical field, but when they did the American version...
Yeah, you told me about it. No.
When they did the American version, they made it more like something else was coming through using our electronics, like that our waves were making a bridge into like another reality.
Yeah, the Japanese movie is one of that's a really great horror film. It's a classic.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I know what you're talking about. I've
The Japanese one is really depressing. The American one, and usually I don't like the American remakes, but I thought the American one was more interesting because they didn't just limit it to ghosts. Mm-hmm. You know, they gave it a little something more interdimensional type of thing.
Yeah, and it's because of the culture, I think, because, you know, it's ghosts are a little passe for Americans these days, you know, and, and also, too, you have to remember the Japanese view on that, you know, they come from sort of an animist sort of society. I mean, Shinto is like an animist religion, and that, you know, there's the idea that like ghosts or spirits, like the idea of like a hungry ghost or like in The Grudge, there's sort of like this curse. Like these ghosts aren't just spirits of people who have deceased. They're almost like emotions that have been given form, like hatred and anger. Given some sort of like physical form. Mm-hmm. And then that idea doesn't necessarily translate to how Americans like see ghosts, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. To us, ghosts are just spirits of the dead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very, very straightforward. Or demons.
Yeah.
Because everything's demons.
Everything's demons now. Hey, even aliens are demons now.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, aliens have been demons for a while.
Oh yeah.
It is the ultimate catch-all for, you know, everything.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Bigfoot, that's just a woods demon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Mothman was a bird demon.
Right, right. And, yeah, it's very, if you see the world in black and white, then everything that's not good, you know, or not understood by you is a demon.
You know, though, I was thinking about this, I was talking with my girlfriend the other day, and I had the idea that if you do draw sort of that Christian dichotomy, that parallel between sort of good and evil spirits into the UFO phenomena, there is kind of an interesting parallel in that, like sort of the Adamski Space Brothers, like contactees, that's almost like an angelic contact. Like you have this beautiful figure who descends from the heavens, preaching this message of like peace and tolerance and, you know, everyone living together in harmony. And then you have the other side of it with alien abduction and sort of these horrible little creatures that come in the night and kidnap you and do experiments. Yeah. All the parallels with like, you know, succubi and incubi lore. So,
You have to remember that, the angelic contactees or angelic, the Space Brothers came from Venus. And Venus is the morning star. Venus is equated with Lucifer.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, it's an interesting, and I don't mean to imply there that the contactee, the Nordics were angels and that greys are demons, but maybe that sort of context, that cultural sort of meme translates in a different time period into sort of different type of encounters.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the whole idea of angels and aliens and whether or not, you know, what you're dealing with is just a product of your language and your culture and your ideas at a certain point.
Yeah. I mean, I think in my latest article about Bender, I was talking about how, you know, in some manner, I think that they are some sort of mimetic life form or mimetic idea form that uses cultural context as a sort of wrapper for communication. Sort of how like we can't really like talk to our dogs, but we can, you know, use symbols or use gestures and sort of to communicate with them. And in the same way, whatever these entities might be, maybe they need to take on a context that we can relate to in order to communicate.
Well, I certainly I find it interesting that I've always played with the idea that, and more in my thought, that in my line of thinking, that they are trying to appear to us as they think that we want them to appear. Even if the experience is horrifying, like the black eyed kids or the Men in Black. I think they still appear to us like how they think we want them to appear.
Mm.
even though it might not even essentially work. But it, I don't know. They wouldn't appear to us always as a good thing, but maybe as something that we would say is negative. But for them, it's just like, well, you know, well, that didn't work. I guess I'll appear as something else later. I don't
well, see, that's why when you summon them, Adam, you tell them to appear in a form that is pleasing to you, just like the good Book of Solomon tells you to do.
I guess I'd have to figure out what that would be for me. So,
you know, I sort of like the Nordics. I wish we had more Nordics these days.
I was going to say a beautiful Nordic woman. There you go.
Yeah, the Asian babes.
I mean, there used to be space babes. I mean, whatever happened to that? Like
for Soraya, it would be a beautiful Nordic woman with a metal t-shirt on.
I mostly get shadows.
Like, I think, is it Monster X, the one Godzilla movie with, like, the space people in it? That's, like, sort of my platonic ideal of what they would look like. Sort of weird visors, antennas, ray guns.
Oh, yeah.
They could appear as anything to you, Sarai, and you would still, your default position would still be, that's weird. That's kind of peculiar that happened.
Well, yeah. It seems to work quite well. Stop and observe.
Yeah.
I'm still here so far.
It's worked for you.
Like I said, I'm more concerned with, you know, like if I hear a noise in the house, I'm not concerned that it's something paranormal. I'd be concerned that it's someone breaking in.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's a realistic point of view.
Yeah, because I'm not worried about some kind of spiritual thing attacking me, but an actual person. Mm-hmm. Well, they could have a gun. They could have a knife. Sure. So that's to me, that's why the paranormal stuff doesn't freak me out so much. I mean, yeah, sometimes it creeps me out a bit, and sometimes it creeps me out more when I think back on it. You know, it'll happen and I'm fine with it, but later I'll think back and go, why didn't that creep me out more? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that weird voice emanating from my closet, and then I went back to sleep. You know?
Well, I mean, it's strange that you say that, because the two paranormal experiences that I...
Oh, we lost you, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
The two paranormal experiences that I've had when I was much younger, I think that's what happened to me. I think I just fell back asleep.
Yeah, well, it happens a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me think that you are actually dealing with something in a slightly altered state of consciousness.
Right. Mike Cleland's experience about seeing the figures outside of his house. I mean, he says he just went back to sleep.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, I'm at a point now where I think that all of the sort of alien abduction style experiences probably take place in an out of body state. I mean, like, when Mike was talking about how when he was camping, he had, you know, an abduction experience, but when he woke up, you know, he was basically still zipped up in a sleeping bag and everything.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The problem is there's a monkey wrench here and there of physical evidence, and it's never conclusive physical evidence, but it's enough to say, like Joe Simiton. Was that it? Simiton?
Yeah.
With the pancakes. As ridiculous as it is, that case never struck me as being a fake encounter, because as Josh shows so well, it fits fairy lore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, right. And the fact that the pancakes were lacking salt is kind of like one of those weird little things, but it makes sense when you realize that these beings apparently don't like salt.
Yeah,
and I'm guessing Joe Simiton didn't know that.
Yeah,
well, it also wasn't gray aliens that gave him the pancakes.
Right, it was humans.
And I think that's the key.
It was swarthy-looking Italian men cooking pancakes on a griddle.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that story in Passport to Magonia?
I believe so.
Like, my favorite story from Magonia, too, is the... it's somewhere in Europe. I can't remember where it is now. It's, like, in Italy or something, or maybe Germany. But this guy is, like, on the side of the road with, you know... what looks to be like a UFO, and he's got like a brown jumpsuit on or something. And somebody basically like pulls over and asks him if he's okay, if he needs some help, you know, which always struck me as really funny. He's like, oh yeah, he just broke down in his flying saucer. He just needs a lift to the next, to the gas station. But the guy says, you know, what year is it? And, you know, they tell him what year it is, and he looks really confused, and he's like, well, where am I? And they tell him, you know, he's in Germany or whatever. And he's like, he's like, basically like I overshot or something. Like he makes some reference to like, I needed to be like a, you know, this other place. And then he's like, okay, thanks. And he, you know, gets in his flying saucer and flies off. And stories like
He must have subscribed to Gaia. I got that package that you were talking about.
Stories like that. Like, okay, so, you know, it's sort of the same time period where this, you know, CIA was doing weird stuff, like the whole Villa-Boas case. But, you know, on one hand, like, God, that's just so evocative. Like, what was that, literally like a time traveler? I mean, that's what it looks like if you just are looking at it from the outside. But
it is evocative, but at the same time, it's also mundane.
Exactly. That's what I love about it. That's the whole thing with the pancakes. It's so mundane. I think that's the stories that fascinate me the most. I mean, you know, I know we,
because if you were gonna make something up, that wouldn't be it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, you're not the star seed. You're not the you know, the chosen one. You're just some guy that the aliens gave you some pancakes, and you gave them some water, and they flew off. You know.
Oh, these guys gave me some pancakes and flew off. I don't know.
Yeah.
And his pancakes didn't mysteriously disappear. Mm-hmm. He gave one to the Air Force. He gave one to be studied. He tried one and decided it tasted terrible. You know, I mean, he behaved in a way that anyone else would ordinarily behave in that situation.
Well, hey, you know, maybe it tasted like a tasty wheat, just like the stuff on the Nebuchadnezzar in the Matrix tasted like.
I love that. I overshot, but.
Yeah, they sent me back too far.
All right, any other interesting things going on we should discuss before we conclude this?
I don't know. I never keep up with current paranormal news. I think that's why this whole blue avian thing was like completely freaking me out.
It was completely new to me, too. I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, I feel like I've got, like, you know, 60 years worth of books to catch up on before I ever pay attention to what's going on right now.
All right. Red Pill, anything come to mind for you?
I don't know. I think we're good.
All right. Adam, anything else?
I'm sure there's all kinds, but I think we'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, this has been a really diverse conversation.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. And tell people where they can find you. Let's start with Ren.
Hey, so people can read my blog at liminalroom.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at Mr. spelled out M-I-S-T-E-R _ APOL, A-P-O-L, just like from the Mothman Prophecies.
Adam?
www.conspiranormal.com, conspiranormal.podomatic.com, where you can get all the archives. And yep, that's it.
And Red Pill, you're doing artwork for people?
Yeah. I mean, dailygrail.com is my main house where I work on the news briefs and where you can find me the most. Mysteriousuniverse.net, where I occasionally contribute to the blogs. And absurdbydesign.com, where is my the new webpage that I'm trying to build, in which I can, you know, I'm trying to use as a main hub for the work that I'm doing online elsewhere.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
All right. And let's take you out with some $50 Dynasty. This is a song called On Down the Road. See you next time.
I had you in my dreams. I can smell you on my sleeve, but I can't breathe. And you're covering a smile, and I'm taking in the scene now, but I can't see. And I'm begging you, please don't.